Rolling.
This is the FedSoc Films Podcast,
where we continue the conversation sparked on film.
You want to know what freedom tastes like? It tastes like this beer.
Take one.
This is, in fact, the classic solution in search of a problem.
Action. That cannot help but be controversial.
Cut.
With expert discussion and analysis.
With the greatest legal minds on the topic today. The FedSoc Films Podcast.
It's a wrap.
A while back, I found myself on a roller coaster, rocketing towards the ground at 90 miles an hour. Let me tell you, it was quite the heart-stopping experience. Not unlike that roller coaster, the cryptocurrency market has weathered a remarkable degree of instability since its inception in 2008. But with the EU looking to tighten the reins and US regulators cracking down, this roller coaster might be coming to an end. Welcome back to the FedSoc Films Podcast. I'm Anne Hartley, your thrill-seeking host. We're joined today by Dr. Una McDonald of Credo Capital to discuss the Regulatory Transparency Project's film, Bitcoin Cowboys, and how the international community has been grappling with this new frontier. Welcome, Dr. McDonald.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Likewise. So I understand you've done quite a lot of work in this area, including a book. What's that all about?
Oh, I traced the various types of crypto assets, starting with Bitcoin, why it began, how it works, and went through the various types of various parts of the history of crypto assets, including the Wild West period, when so many people thought that they were buying in to new coins, with white papers that gave them totally inadequate information, back through NFTs, and then finally was common sense going to arrive with central bank digital currencies? Well, none of the major players have made up their minds about that yet, but that's another subject. And then I also looked at the beginnings of regulation in that way, which were very limited. In that regard, which were very limited. Now, given, as you've rightly said, Anne, the worst possible ride during the fall last year, when so many retail investors lost so much money, now, of course, the regulators are beginning to wake up and are being pressed to wake up by all the losers.
Yeah, it really does seem like with all the ups and downs, regulators are starting to really focus on this area. Can you explain what it is exactly that regulators are, or who it is perhaps, that regulators are regulating here?
That's a very good question, because they are not quite sure whom they are regulating or how to regulate them. I actually think that this is a completely unnecessary worry. They have been hindered by the pressures from the crypto industry to say, one, if you regulate us, you will halt innovation. Not true. Secondly, if you regulate us, well, then the poor will not have a cheap and quick way of sending remittances home. And that one is even less true. So I think that they have been pressed hard. This is all new. This is innovation. You should not stop financial innovation. And one can have some sympathy with that point. What do they think they actually have to regulate? Well, the EU is leading the way on that, because it's quite clear that they have to regulate the crypto asset service providers, that is, companies. And the EU regulations, I think, are a very sensible approach. But of course, that is limited to crypto asset service providers who are actually located within the European Union. And of course, some will decide not to locate there at all and locate in other parts of the world. So that's one problem. Whom are you regulating, but where are they which jurisdiction are they under? And then you have some like Binance, the largest exchange in the world, who cheerfully said to a recent conference, "This is an internet company, so it doesn't have a geographical location. And why should it? It's internet." I took a very cynical view of that remark and thought, you don't want to be located anywhere because you don't want to be under any jurisdiction. And then what exactly are you regulating? You're regulating crypto assets. What are they? Well, some are stable coins, supposedly depending on a fiat currency like the dollar, one-to-one for the dollar. Some are investments, although that is hotly denied, because here that would bring them under the Securities and Exchange Commission. And some are called non-fungible tokens, which were all the rage last year, but have fallen by 90%, because a non-fungible token was a digital representation of nothing, really. Example, you could spend quite a lot of money on buying a crypto kitty. And as I frequently point out, crypto kitty looks very pretty, a picture of it, but you can't stroke it. You don't have it to give it any milk or cream, and it doesn't cuddle up to you ever. So what is it you're actually buying? And that, I think, has been a problem that regulators have been, slow to tackle.
Gotcha. I take it you haven't purchased any NFTs yourself here then.
Absolutely not. No. Any more than I would buy a Bitcoin. Bitcoins are always represented as those pretty gold coins on any newspaper you read or anything that you see online. Well, that's just a marketing tool. Although sometimes people say to me, if I buy a Bitcoin, will I get a gold coin? I said, no. What you're actually buying is a long string of numbers, which you will never remember because they're much longer than any telephone number that you've ever come across. So what you buy is something digital, virtual. It does not exist in the real world, in the real physical world.
Right. So you had mentioned a couple minutes ago the question of innovation and regulation. Are those at odds, or do you think that they can work together?
I think that they can certainly work together. The UK, for example, set up what it called regulatory sandboxes, which means that various crypto asset providers would come to them and they would go through, what is it you're trying to do? How does it work? What are the risks involved? And that gives an opportunity for innovation. But what I would also say is this: you have to make a very sharp distinction between the technology and the use to which it's put in the crypto world. Blockchain and other relevant technologies are useful and should perhaps be taken up more extensively by the financial services industry, since that's really the main focus, because they are extremely helpful. Very briefly, Hong Kong project, now an actuality. Banks were being defrauded by trade finance companies who would borrow from one bank and then another for the same project, allegedly, and then disappear with all the money. So now the major banks in Hong Kong are on a blockchain, so that if you apply for your trade finance for your project to Bank A, then immediately banks B, C, D, and E all know that you have applied, and therefore only Bank A will provide the loan. And that is, of course, extremely useful. It prevents fraud. So we have a new technology. Let's think about the uses of that. But in the meantime, we do have to regulate the uses to which the crypto industry puts the new technology.
Absolutely. That is fascinating to hear. You know, I know that cryptocurrency is associated so much with fraud. So hearing that it's been used, at least in terms of the blockchain, to prevent fraud is really neat to hear.
Exactly. And it could be used more extensively. It could probably be used to prevent money laundering. Whereas, of course, many crypto companies are using it for the purposes of money laundering. Because although the transactions are publicly recorded, the use of the private key, you have to use both to transfer money from one person to another. You have to use your private key, but your private key is private. That's only known to you, nobody else. So the transactions can take place, but who is sending what amounts of money to whom is entirely obscure.
How are regulators tackling that?
Two ways. First of all, I'll tell you about. First of all, the regulators, including here in America, FinCEN, are getting much better at locating the IP address of the person using the private key. And they do that by looking at the transactions that have taken place, looking on the dark web, and so on. Those are skills that I don't have, but are being acquired by others. Now, in the UK, their first step towards regulating was money laundering, and they required companies based in the UK to register and to prove that they had adequate procedures in place for knowing your customer, money laundering, and terrorist financing. And the figures are very interesting. This started in June 2021. And 244 were listed as unregistered. And many of those applied to be licensed with proper AML procedures in place. Only 34 companies pass the test, are registered and supervised. When the process began, only 5% had enough for the regulators to decide, and they had to work with another 30% to get them up to standard. That left the 244 on the list. 65% of those have ceased to trade. Now, here's a name that some people will, sadly, perhaps too many people will be familiar with, Celsius. Celsius was originally located in London. It then moved to Florida, saying that it had a disagreement with the regulators in the UK. Well, the disagreement wasn't quite a disagreement. It was that it didn't pass muster for the FCA to actually license it in the UK on the grounds of its money laundering and know your customer procedures, which were absent. So that's why Celsius up sticks and moved from London to Florida. Because at the moment, there's really nothing much in place in America except for the Department of Financial Services, New York. But of course, that is limited in its application because it can only apply to people who are resident in New York. But of course, with the internet, people just go outside New York and do what they like.
So I'm curious, with the mention of New York and Florida in the United States, our film Bitcoin Cowboys focuses specifically on Wyoming and their approach to crypto regulation. Yeah. How do you think that their special purpose depository institutions stack up against the regulatory schemes in other parts of the globe, so like the UK, the EU, places like that?
Well, I think there's a real problem with the special purpose depository institutions. They only work effectively in the provision of secure and reliable banking services. They can only work in that regard if you have a Federal Reserve banking account. A number of the banks located there do not have the master account at the Federal Reserve. Kansas did not grant it. And the Federal Reserve as a whole is not willing to do so, because that would actually have far too many players, probably not up to standards, and that could add to the financial stability risk. Neither do these have federal FDIC insurance. So they can't meet the definition of the bank. They are not subject to consolidated banking supervision. And if we take a large exchange like Kraken, it could own a special purpose depository institution based in Wyoming, but the parent company would not be regulated or supervised. But the trouble is that the SPDI tag is used, and if you Google, you will find this in some references to Kraken and others. They're referred to as banks. So people, the ordinary retail consumer, oh, it's a bank. So if I lose my deposit, I'll be okay then, which is not, of course, the case. So until is the least likely option, they will not be able to function as banks as we normally understand it. And there's another problem with the deposit and transfer legislation. Customers can seamlessly put bitcoins into accounts without a middleman. What is the chief risk here? Under that legislation, the banks can hold the right to hold the private key, or that's the unique code which allows Bitcoin owners and owners of other coins access to their digital accounts. So once you've given a deposit and transfer company your private key, you have lost control of your coins and therefore of your deposits and your assets. So I see, then there's another set of problems that I see, and these are called DAOs. They are decentralized organizations. Oh dear, there's so much presentation around this. They are described as member management organizations. So you all have a stake in the number of coins that you own, and you all take part through your votes in managing the whole organization problem. Chainalysis has done a full analysis of very many DAOs. And, of course, the person who owns the most coins or stakes, as they're called, determines the outcome of the vote. And the majority of the votes are usually held by the founders. So in other words, they are in command of the policy of the DAO. And of course, because it's supposedly member management, you don't have executive officers, you don't have a board, corporate governance board, none of that applies. So yes, there's legislation there, but to me, there's holes in it of which companies could easily take advantage. And that worries me because, you know, we've seen the presentations on the internet of so many crypto assets, and those promises are either not there, so you don't know what will happen, or the promises are there, but the terms and conditions change. So I wouldn't go in the direction of Wyoming myself. I would look carefully at what I got and at the legislation. There are a number of bills. But even so, those were the anxieties that I would have that I've identified.
Sounds not inconsiderable, not by a long stretch. How does that stack up against the EU's legislation?
Well, as I said, the EU legislation is really very comprehensive. And so if you're a crypto asset service provider, you have to be located within the EU, and there are all sorts of conditions that apply. You have to have proper reserve assets. You have to have proper corporate governance. You are actually inspected and regulated. If you're a stable coin, you have to show, you know, if your stable coin is meant to be one-to-one with a euro or a dollar, then you have to show that you've got enough dollars and enough euros in your bank, whichever bank you choose, to be able to redeem all those coins whenever people want to. And of course, you know, if you set out to redeem something, there are usually terms and conditions. How long does it take? Is there a fee? How much is that fee? Can I redeem everything I've got there all at once, or do I have to do it in stages? All of those are the sort of questions that people naturally should ask or should be asking. And so you've got detailed rules. You have to say what your rules are, and of course they have to be acceptable, so that people can redeem their coins. And all of that has to be public information. So you really fall under the sort of regulations that you would expect to apply to any financial services company. And when people moan about that, as frequently crypto assets do, I say, well, look, you're running a business, you're offering a service to your customers, you are running certain risks. For example, if people have put deposits with you, how much should they be able to borrow? Are you going to be able to let them borrow 125% of their deposits, as was the case with Celsius? In other words, I go very much for the Basel principle. Same business, same risks, same rules. And really, that's what crypto asset companies are trying to do, depending on what particular service they wish to offer. Now, with the European Union, the markets in crypto assets, it's called. It's very long. I mean, I've only scratched the surface there, but I hope picked out relevant parts for, particularly for retail investors. Parliament will formally pass it in February, and then it comes, it's implemented straight away. And what I'd also like to say about that is that this has been the result of 2 years' work on wide consultation with the industry and with the public, with those with relevant skills or knowledge. I looked at the public consultations earlier, and really anybody could say what they thought. So all of that has been taken into account. It's gone through various committees, discussions between the Commission and the Parliament and its committees, and so on. So it is the result of 2 years' hard work. But since it's out there now, I think that other countries could look very clearly at it. Always more difficult for America because you have so many regulators.
No doubt about it. Thank you so much, Una. It's been an absolute pleasure to chat with you. I feel like I've learned so much about both Wyoming and the EU and the UK. This has been great.
Good. Thank you. Well, it's a pleasure to talk about all of this. I've got my own ideas on what to do with stable coins. And that would be complete transparency. And I'm not sure how many stable coins would survive after that. But yeah, anyway.
Of course, it's a wild world out there.
It is indeed, yes. No, thank you very much for the opportunity. I've enjoyed it immensely as well.
Glad to hear it. A big howdy to our listeners for coming along for the ride here. Take a look at our film, Bitcoin Cowboys, on our YouTube channel or at fedsoc.org. That's FEDSOC.org. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. That's a wrap.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.